Chapman of White Oaks of Jelna by Martha de la Roche. This is the first in a series of five episodes adapted for radio by John Bethune and produced by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This series will focus on the Jelna household in Ontario during the period when Old Gran, the formidable matriarch of the White Oaks family, is nearing her end, and the family is kept in suspense about her unpredictable will. The title of this first episode is The Family.
In the autumn of 1926, there were four generations of the White Oak family living at Jelna. Gathered under one roof, they constituted a singularly formidable group. Vigorous, high-tempered, and fiercely independent. But the great brick country house was more than equal to them. For nearly three-quarters of a century, it had withstood their turbulent comings and goings as imperturbably as it had weathered the changing of the southern Ontario season. Indeed, like the White Oaks themselves, Jelna seemed almost indestructible. The heart of the house was the dining room, a very large, high-ceilinged room hung with family portraits and full of heavy furniture that would have overshadowed and depressed a weaker clan. But at table, the White Oaks were generally too intent upon eating and drinking and squabbling to pay much heed to their surroundings. Certainly such was the case one chill, rainy night in November when for supper. At one end of the massive mahogany table sat Rennie, the head of the house. A tall, lean man of 40 with dark red hair and a narrow, fox-like face. Rennie was of a third generation of White Oaks, and as the master of Jelna, undertook his duties with proper seriousness.
Some more of the souffle, Aunt Augusta.
His question was directed to a dignified and well-preserved lady of 75, who presided over an enormous silver teapot at the other end of the table. Although born a White Oak, she now rejoiced in the title of Lady Buckley, being the widow of an English baronet, upon whose death the previous year she had most reluctantly left her house in England and come back to live at Jelna.
No, thank you, my dear. I really should not have eaten as much as I have. Cheese dishes at night are not very digestible for persons of advancing years.
As she spoke, Lady Buckley cast a significant glance at the two elderly gentlemen seated side by side at her right. These were her brothers, Nicholas and Ernest, both in their 70s, but otherwise a remarkably dissimilar pair. Rennie addressed the elder, a heavy, untidy old man with a drooping gray mustache.
Another helping, Uncle Nick?
Not another bite of anything, but I should like one more cup of tea, if you've any left, Augusta.
Uncle Ernest?
Yeah, what's that?
More of this tea stuff.
Ernest White Oak, at 72, was a slender, elegant man with a somewhat courtly manner. He waved aside Rennie's offer with a languid hand.
My dear boy, no. I should not have touched it at all. I wish we might not have these hot dishes for supper. I'm tempted, and then I suffer.
And all the family suffers with you.
Don't be rude, Nicholas.
What about you fellows? More souffle?
The fellows referred to were Rennie's half-brothers. Piers White Oak, a sturdy, aggressive young man in his early 20s, and little Wakefield, a frail, rather nervous child of 11. Both had been eyeing the souffle dish expectantly.
Right.
But before either could reply to Rennie's question, Lady Buckley interposed.
Certainly not. They are neither of them to have any more. Piers has already had two helpings.
But I could still take another spoonful, Aunt.
Me too. I'd like some more, please, Rennie.
No, Wakefield, I forbid it.
But why?
You are too young a boy to eat a cheese dish at night.
And you, Augusta, are too old a woman to swill down a pot full of tea at this hour.
Nicholas, I know how difficult it is for you not to be caught, but I do wish you would consider what a bad example it is for the boys.
Boys? What boys? I can hardly call Piers a boy.
I can hope not. I'm a married man and a father, I'd have you remember.
I am well aware of that, thank you, Piers. I was referring to Wakefield and Finch.
Where is young Finch, by the way? Isn't he coming to supper?
He said he was going to watch Rennie ride at the horse show today.
Did you see him there, Rennie?
Yes. He came home in the car with Pheasant and me. I haven't seen him since.
Probably in the drawing room, mooning over that infernal piano.
Well, he'd better not be. I've forbidden him to touch it.
Oh, come, come now, Rennie. Aren't you being a bit harsh on the lad?
It's for his own good, Uncle Ernie. And Finch starts playing the piano. He goes on and on for hours on end and thinks about nothing else.
Boy has talent, you know. I think he plays Chopin quite exquisitely.
Maybe so. But his schoolwork comes first. And until he's passed his matric, he'll just have to forget about music.
Rennie's absolutely right. All this artistic nonsense of Finch's is just an excuse for not working.
Not necessarily, Piers. Just because he doesn't share your interest in cows and pigs and horses doesn't mean that Finch is lazy. In fact, it's my opinion that...
But Lady Buckley's opinion was destined not to be heard, for just at that moment, the subject of their discussion came slouching into the room. Finch Whiteoak was 18, a lanky, awkward youth with a mop of unruly fair hair and a look of perpetual hunger about him. As he came to the table, he mumbled a sheepish apology and slid into a chair between his brothers, Wakefield and Pierce.
There's still some souffles, Finch, but I expect it's cold by now.
Serves them right. Where have you been all this time?
None of your business.
I just hope you weren't playing the piano.
No, I was studying.
I smell tobacco. Have you been at my cigarettes again, Finch?
No, I haven't. For Pete's sake, leave me alone.
Give the boy some cold beef, Rennie. Look half starved.
He always does. How anyone can eat so much without putting on weight is quite beyond me.
How was the horse show, Finch?
Oh, didn't Rennie tell you? He won the Corinthian class.
Congratulations.
Another blue ribbon for Jeff.
And my brilliant young wife got a red in the lady.
Well, Miss Celebration, Rennie, what do you say to a bottle of rum, you? Something special.
Now, what do you suggest?
Well, what's down in the wine cellar?
Not much. Keg of ale, a date of port, a few bottles of Burke's Jamaica, some slow gin, and scotch, of course.
And you call that a wine cellar?
Well, it's always been called a wine cellar, Uncle Ernie. We can't stop calling it that, even if there isn't much in it now.
I thought we had a bottle of French vermouth.
Oh, let's up in my room. A little rum and water with a touch of lemon juice will suit me, Rennie.
Yes, I think I'd like to say.
Plain rum and water for me.
And Augusta?
Well, a glass of port, thank you, my dear. Can I go with you, Rennie? I hardly ever get to see the wine cellar.
All right, come along.
Wine cellar. What a satisfaction. Oh, when I think how Father used to keep it stocked in the old days. All those cases of burgundy and claret.
And the cognac and liqueur.
And all the champagne. Do you remember the ball for the Governor General and his lady?
How Jonas changed.
We had 1,000 acres then.
And a proper staff of servants.
Well, we still got damn fine horses.
True, Pierce, true. Yeah, I'd like to have gone to the horse show today. Did you see Rennie ride?
No, I had to bring the vet out to look at Cora.
The new mare? What's the matter with her?
She's cut her hind leg. It may be a serious business. She's due to foal next month.
Horses.
What are you mumbling about, Finch?
You and your horses. Don't you ever think of anything else?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I often think of giving you a good hiding.
Well, just you try.
I don't think I can. Yeah.
Oh, boy! Please, hold yourself. If you wish to fight, go out to the stables. While you're here, you will please remember that your grandmother is just across the hall.
She'll be thumping with her stick if you're not quiet.
How is Mama today? Did she manage to get out?
Heavens, yes. She insisted on walking all the way to the gate and back in the rain.
And 101. She really is a most remarkable woman.
Who's a most remarkable woman, me?
The speaker was a slim, dark-eyed girl of 19 who had entered unnoticed from the hall. Dressed in riding clothes and with her hair cropped very short, she looked like a handsome boy as she crossed to the table and drew up a chair beside Piers. This was Pheasant, wife of Piers, and mother of the most recent addition to the White Oak family tree, an infant son.
Well, Pheasant, congratulations.
Yes.
There you won a ribbon today.
Yes, well done, splendid, my dear.
Well, it's only a red one, I'm afraid.
Oh, well.
But Soldier's boy is in marvelous form.
Ernest, pass Pheasant her bread and milk, if you will.
Oh, yes,
I think it's still hot, my dear.
Thank you, Aunt Augusta.
How you can eat such pap beats me.
I was thought up in it, darling, didn't you know?
Besides, it's good for baby.
Did you get him to sleep?
Oh, yes, finally.
Get some glasses, Wake, in the coach, too. Here we are. Port for Lady Buckley. Burke's Jamaica for the rest.
What about you, Pheasant?
No, thanks. Nothing for me.
Nonsense. We're drinking to Jalna's legs. Put some rum in the bread and milk, Pierce. Good for that infant of yours. Help make him a white hope. Help? And a gentleman.
He's both already, Uncle Nick. And I'll not encourage him in a taste for rum. Give it second hand.
I think I might have something.
What, you?
Oh, I'm going on 19. I guess I can stand a drink or two.
Give him a sip of your port, Aunt Augusta.
Oh, shut up, Piers.
Watch yourself, my lad.
Oh, come, let the boy have a glass of rum, Rennie. Doing good.
The bottle's on the sideboard, Finch. Help yourself.
Thank you.
Hey, you dropped something, Finch.
What?
It's a ticket. Number 31.
Hey, let me see. Well, I'll be shot. It's a lottery ticket.
What are you up to, Finch?
Here, give it back to me.
Not so fast, young fellow. What's it for?
I said give it back to me, Pierce.
Don't you know schoolboys aren't supposed to gamble?
What's that? What did you say about gambling?
Finch has been trying to win himself a fortune, Uncle Ernie.
But it must be stopped at once. Rennie, you must not allow the boy to gamble.
Right, right.
Well, it's only a lottery ticket. I bought it at the horse show for a quarter.
What's the lottery for?
Oh, good Lord, what difference does it make? Can't I buy a silly ticket if I want it?
You can buy a dozen if you wish, but I don't like the way you're behaving over this one. What's it for?
As an infant, the way people treat
them. Answer my question, Finch. What is it for?
Well, for a canary.
Canary! Oh, my God!
Oh, goodness sake! Be quiet! You'll wake them up! Oh, there. What did I tell you?
Oh, dear, it's really very bad for her to be disturbed like this.
Shall I go in and talk to her for a while? No, no, my dear. It's best if she just goes back to sleep. Wakefield.
Yes, Aunt Augusta.
Go to your grandmother's room. Open the door very quietly and say, there is nothing wrong, Grandmama. Mm-hmm. Please compose yourself.
What's so amusing, dear?
I'm just picturing Grandmama's face when little Wake comes out with that.
Wakefield crossed the hall, solemn with the weight of his own importance. Silently, he opened the door of his grandmother's room and, gliding in, looked almost fearfully about. The heavily curtained chamber was very still and smelled of sandalwood and camphor. In the faint glow of a nightlight near the bed, he could just make out the old lady's face against her pillows and the brilliant plumage of a parrot perched motionless on the painted leather bedstead. Both the parrot and the bedstead were mementos of another Jalma, the British military station where Captain and Mrs. White Oak had spent their early married years. And Wakefield had long ago learned to treat all such objects with respect. Cautiously, then, he moved towards the bed and had almost reached the footboard when the parrot suddenly rose on its claws, stretched its wings, and opened its beak.
Nothing wrong, Grandmama. Please compose yourself.
Oh, that's what you say.
Compose yourself.
Compose myself. I'll compose this family with my sister. What's all that noise in the dining room? Answer me, boy. What were they talking about?
About a canary. Finch has a lot of...
A canary? I won't have it. I won't have another bird in the house. It'll put Bonnie into a rage.
In the dining room, everyone seemed to be talking at once.
Everyone, that is, except Finch, who, having finished his rum, was now occupied with a slab of cold beef, oblivious to the confusion of voices around him. Then suddenly, the voices stopped, and a shocked hush fell over the room. In the doorway stood old Mrs. White Oak, clad in a long purple dressing gown, her nightcap askew and concealing one eye, her toothless mouth set in grim disapproval. Leaning heavily on a gold-headed stick on one side, and supported by a little Wakefield's shoulder on the other, she cast an authoritative look over her descendants.
What's all this to do? What's happening here?
Well, Gran, what's brought you out?
Mama, this is very bad for you.
How did you? Did she get up?
I helped her. I pushed her from behind.
You're a very naughty boy, Wakefield. You deserve to be whipped.
All right. The time be. He minds his business and does what he's told. Which is more than you do, Lady Bunty.
Are you hungry, Gran? Is that what brought you out?
No, of course she's not hungry. She had a large bowl of cornflakes and puffed rice before she went to bed.
Cornflakes? Silly leaves, that's what they are. And puffed rice, silly seeds. Leaves and seeds. Fit food for a silly canary. Canary! Where's young Finch?
Here, Grandmama.
I won't have it, you hear? I won't have it.
Have what?
This blibbered exhibit canary you've smuggled into the house.
But I haven't any canary.
Don't contradict me, boy. Fetch it here at once and I'll read it.
No, but there isn't any canary, honestly, Grandma. I've only got a lot of ticket.
You lie to me, would you? Come here, you young whelp, where I can get at you. Now then, take that.
Well hit, Gran.
Mama!
There'll be no nasty kick-cat birds in this house to upset my bony. Is that understood?
Steady on, old girl.
Ma, you really must control your temper. You might well have a stroke.
Stroke, is it? Yes! I gave him a stroke, all right. It hurt him, too, didn't I, Finch? Put out your hand and let me see. Look at his knuckles. Blood! I drew blood!
Go and wash it off at once.
Yes. All right.
And don't forget your homework, my lad.
Oh, go to hell.
What the deuce is the matter with that boy?
Nothing's the matter with him. Stood up like a man when I hit him. The real white old rat. Like his grandfather.
Mama, don't you think you should go back to bed?
No, I'm hungry. Well, what's in that silver dish?
It was a cheese souffle, but it's all gone now.
There's still some cold roast beef.
Good, I'll have some. Where's my teeth? I can't eat roast beef without my teeth. Somebody fetch him quick.
Oh, dear. Will one of you please go and get her teeth?
I will. Where are they?
On the table by her bed. And wait.
Yes?
Be careful you don't drop the glass.
Yes, sir.
Glass, you say? Yes, that's what I want. A glass of wine.
You think you should, Mama?
Why not? I don't need my teeth to drink. Then he fetch me some wine.
There's only port, I'm afraid.
Never mind, it'll do.
Half a glass will be sufficient, Rennie.
Half a glass for me?
You'll only make yourself hiccup.
Ah, I can carry my wine as well as anyone. Better than you, Lady Buncombe. Fill it up, Rennie, up to the brim.
Right you are, Gran.
Take your teeth, my grandmother.
Good boy, wake. Let's have him.
Oh, kissy, careful, child. Here, let me do it.
Wake, it's time you were off to bed.
Oh, Rennie, please.
Go on now, get...
Oh, all right. Good night, my grandmother.
Good night, my child.
Good night.
There. And now then, where's my beef?
Mama, do be careful.
Careful, the dam. Don't be such a ninny and a...
But at this time of night, you will only upset your inside.
My inside are better than yours. Or old husband. In India, your father and I ate curries that would stand your hair on end. Well, there was a man. Why aren't you and Nick Mood like him, eh?
I really couldn't say, Mama.
I'm the one who's like him, eh, Gran?
You pee yourself nonsense. You couldn't hold a candle to him.
But you've always said I look exactly like him.
Here, I'll stand under his portrait. Well?
Stand up straight, like a soldier. That's better. Yes, you are like him, very. Same old blue eyes, same stubborn mouth. handsome as officer in India. Handsomest man in the
army. Lamar, don't you think?
She's gone to sleep. Rennie, help me get rid of some of this food. Quickly, before she wakes. Here, put away her glass of wine.
She's a game, old bird, all right.
Game or not, she must get back to bed.
And I must get back to my infant. Good night, everyone.
Good night. What's that? Why is everyone whispering? What are you saying?
We're saying you should get back to bed.
Yes, I should. Help me up, one of you.
Right you are, Gran. Easy does it now. That's it.
Did I make a good supper?
Yes, well, yes, indeed. Look, your plate's almost empty.
That will show you. That I couldn't do it, didn't you?
Rennie, will you and Piers assist her?
Aye.
I'll get her bed ready.
Come on, Gran. Here's your stick.
Good night, old girl.
Good night, Mama.
Good night. Good night, all.
Steady now. Just lean on me.
By God, she really is a marvel, isn't she?
Incredible. I'd like to think I'd have all that energy at 101.
Oh, but you'll never make it, Ernest.
Hmm?
Neither will I. Mama will outlive us both.
Nonsense. She can't possibly live much longer. A few months more. Year at the most, I imagine.
And then we'll know, Ernie.
No? What do you mean?
We'll know who gets her money.
Oh, yes. That's...
Oh, come. Don't pretend you haven't been thinking about
it. Well, of course I've thought about it. When one is as hard up as I am, one can hardly ignore the presence of $100,000.
I don't suppose she's dropped any hints about it lately, has she?
Not so far as I know.
Well, I think it's damnably unfair. All she's ever said is that one of us will get the entire amount. Mm-hmm. With none of us any idea which one. Oh, it's downright diabolical of Mama to keep us in suspense this way.
But, my dear Nicholas, how else could she maintain her power over us?
You're right, of course. She's a wily old bird.
In any event, I don't see why you should be upset.
You don't?
Well, no. After all, you're the eldest son. It's only proper the money should come to you.
Proper, yes, but far from certain, Ernest.
Why do you say that?
Because Mama's never forgiven the fact of my divorce.
My dear fellow, that was years ago.
No, not to Mama. A white oak divorced. Oh, I can still see the look on her face when I told her.
But surely she can't still hold it against you.
Oh, yes, she can. Why, maybe her eldest son, but I've never been her favorite. As a matter of fact, you've always been much closer to her than I.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And I scarcely think she'd trust me with a family fortune.
Why not?
My dear Nicholas, do you imagine Mama's forgotten all the money I lost in England? The debts Father had to pay for me?
Well, no, but you were only in your 20s then.
Yes, but I'm afraid that where money is concerned, Mama still thinks of me as a gullible young fool out of Oxford.
Well, then, if you and I are out of the running, that leaves either Rennie or Piers.
I think Piers is the more likely one.
Really? Why?
Well, in the first place, he's the only one of us to produce a son and heir. Mm. And in the second place, he's growing to look more and more like Father every day. And I needn't tell you what effect that has on Mama.
No, I saw the way she looked at him tonight when he stood under Father's portrait.
Exactly. Now, as to Rennie's chance of inheriting...
Hold on, here he comes.
Hello? Are you two still carousing?
No, would you? Just having a nightcap. Will you come and join us?
Thanks, I will.
Do you think it wise, dear boy? Aren't you riding in the horse show tomorrow?
Yes. The high jumping is tomorrow.
Then you'll need a cool head, surely.
Don't worry, Uncle Ernie. A little rum never hurt a white oak.
I wish that were true. I've had only two small glasses, and I feel quite odd.
That comes from drinking scarcely anything stronger than tea. You get your system in such a state that a little honest spirit upsets it. Well, here's to another blue ribbon tomorrow, Rennie.
Gallner's nags.
By the way, Rennie, was there a noticeable chill in the Coliseum today?
A chill? No, I don't think so. Why?
Well, I think I may come and watch you ride tomorrow, but I'm not sure what I should wear.
Wear your new overcoat, old boy. It's just the thing.
Yes, I believe I will. Well, it's time I was getting to bed. Don't sit up all night drinking, Nicholas. Remember your gout.
No, as if I could forget it.
Good night, dear boy.
Good night, Uncle Ernest.
Poor old Ernie. He's so proud of his new overcoat. He's been waiting for an excuse to show it off for weeks.
Remarkable how elegant he always manages to look.
You should have seen him in the old days in London. No end of a swell without Ernie.
Seems a damn shame that he had to stay cooped up here in the farm all these years. You too, for that matter, Uncle Nick.
Oh, well, his mama delights in reminding us it's the price we must pay for the follies of our youth.
He was in rare good form tonight, don't you think?
Yes. But I'm afraid it can't last very much longer.
I know.
Rennie, tell me something. Has she ever said anything to you about how she's left her money?
No, not a word. I've always taken it for granted you'll get it.
Why?
Well, you're the eldest son.
But you're the head of the house. Why shouldn't she leave it to you?
Well, not a chance, I'm afraid. God knows I could use it. But I've already had my share of grandfather's estate. I can hardly expect to get Jelna and the money.
No, no, I suppose not. Well, I'd better try and get some sleep. This damn gout kept me awake until nearly dawn this morning.
May I help you up the stairs?
No, 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 I can manage, thanks. Good night.
Good night, Uncle Nick.
Left alone in the great empty dining room, the master of Jalna sat twisting the glass of rum in his hand with an air of deep abstraction. The question of who would inherit his grandmother's money was one that troubled him more than he cared to have known. As the head of the house for the past 8 years, he had dealt with every family crisis, from domestic quarrels to failing crops, with a vigor and decisiveness expected of him. But the crisis that loomed before him now left him feeling hopelessly inadequate. The family would look to him for leadership, yet he knew no more than anyone else what to expect in the days to come. Only the savage old lady, resting now in her painted leather bed across the hall, knew what was going to happen. And for the present, she chose to keep it to herself. In Chapter 1 of White Oaks of Jalna, John Bethune's radio adaptation of the famous Canadian novel by Mazo de la Roche. Old Gran was played by Ruth Springford, Lady B by Aileen Steeton, Nicholas by Tommy Tweed, Ernest by John Bethune, Rene by John Scott, Piers by Richard Davidson, Finch by Warren Wilson, Wakefield by Billy May Richards, and Pheasant by Mia Anderson. Bony the Parrot was played by Peg Dixon, and the storyteller was Frank Perry. The series was produced by Essa Young and made available to this station by the International Service of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.